Give a warm inner circle welcome to Tommy Mello and, of course, Howard.
I know Howard loves Trump, so that's why I did that.
So does Tommy.
That's true.
That song was actually banned at our conference. I don't know how it got back on the playlist. I never have liked it, even though I love to watch Trump dance to it. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How we doing? Man, it feels good to just sit down up here instead of standing up trying to teach stuff. So welcome, my friend Tommy Mello. And let's welcome Bree, his fiance, right back there with Ellen Rohr. Because you know that behind every successful man, there is a successful woman. There's a phenomenal woman. And Bree was Tommy's assistant. And
a decade ago.
So she becomes, anyway, y'all can tell that story later if you want to. But the point is that they're a great couple, and I'm so glad that they're friends. Tommy has been with us before. And the first question, Tommy, I want to ask you is, why are you here? Like, you're mega successful now. Why are you here with us?
Yeah, well, there's several reasons why. I mean, Houston, we happen to have a very successful location out here. So anytime I could kill two birds with one stone, I wish I could spend the time that I used to spend with my team. But these guys last night were out to dinner, and they were just so grateful. And I was even more grateful to spend time with them. And when I'm close to the guys out there doing the work, and we do have a few women technicians, I wish we had so many more because they kick butt. But it's very, very important to me. And I had an opportunity to be in Dallas on Wednesday and spend a lot of time with the Dallas group. So there's one good reason. The other one is you've always been great. I mean, I think you buy Bree more flowers than I buy her, which is really unfortunate. But
yeah, there's a story behind that. So Bree, where are you? If you have a dozen roses, will you take them on the plane with you, or are you going to throw them away?
No, I'm
going to
take them on the plane.
You can take them on the plane. Okay. Team, do we have a dozen roses for her? If we don't, go get them. Okay. They were ordered. We might have to work on our systems here a little bit. Actually, my team has like been working overtime and whatever, but we're going to make that happen. Even if I have to go get them.
You know, Howard, I'll say this about the people here is you've been doing this a long time, all the way back since the Zig Ziglar days. And I get in a lot of rooms. I see a lot of the same people, especially because I got my own event. And I've had people call me up and say, I was this close to committing suicide. I was this close to going through a divorce. I was this close to losing my kids. I was this close to... I've seen a lot of people, too, say, look, I wasn't happy. I didn't take care of myself. I thought I did it because of my wife or husband and my kids. And my message is always, do it for you. And so I think the number one word I would say is impact is what I want to have. I actually go to Impact Church. It's kind of funny that word, impact, is... my pastor called me and he said, this year it's about whatever it takes. And I do like getting out here. I do like meeting people because... someone will walk up to me or call me up in a week and say, I got something for you, and it's going to change your life. So I'm the one always putting myself out there. I'm the one that's the visionary. I'm the one supposed to be learning and testing new software. And by the way, most of the stuff fails. A lot of stuff doesn't work. But when it does work, there's a guy, Jeff Bezos said, in business... when you swing for the fences, unlike baseball, you could hit four RBIs, you could hit four runs. In business, you could hit 10,000 runs. So when we take chances and we test, a lot of times we do win. I mean, I think about this. We were 3.5 years ago, we were at 27 million of EBITDA. We're going to pass 110 million of EBITDA this year. So now it's like scaling at this whole new level. And I got a plan to get us to a billion of EBITDA really, really quickly, because we generate 34,000 leads a month and we're in 25,000 homes a month.
So before we get into business tactics, and one of the reasons I wanted to interview you like this is because a lot of times people want like the backstory. They want to know, okay, how does this all like fit together? And so for the people that are in the room that don't know your story, where did you start?
Yeah. Well, I started in Michigan. And it really is, it's important, because when I was 4 years old, I don't think this should happen to any kid, but it happens. And by the way, I'm not sad about it. But I'm 4 years old every day, standing on the toilet, listening through the drywall of my mom and dad, which eventually 3 years later became a divorce, arguing about bills, money, always that, you know, what are we going to do? And I just decided at 4 years old, I'm never going to, this is not going to ruin my family, at least my personal family, when I have kids. So I'm going to be 43, Bree's a lot younger. So she's got childbearing features. So I'm going to have a much later family. I'm going to be an old man in a walker going to see my kids' graduation. But so that's where it started. And then mom worked three jobs. She was a hustler. She's like, you know, I was a kid. She got me in everything. Anything I wanted to do, she was my biggest support. My dad taught me how to be competitive. And we don't give second place trophies in this family. You win or lose. And so I just remember mom working all the time. And she still made time for me, but I just realized I was so annoyed when my sister would ask her for money. So I said, man, if it snowed out, I was shoveling every free, I was knocking on doors, getting 10 bucks, and I was out there shoveling snow. I was mowing lawns at 7, 8 years old. Like, I had a Honda, and that's all I needed to mow the lawns. And so I always had money. When I was 12, I got a job washing dishes under the table, because you had to be 13 to be legally able to work. So my work ethic was strong. And my mom, her best year, she sold 53 houses, which is pretty remarkable, because she used to knock on doors. She'd go door to door. Every time she saw it for sale by owner, she'd be knocking that door. She's like, I got to stop. So we'd stop 7 times on the way home from school. And then, you know, I knew how to work hard. And then I figured it out a lot later in life that I don't want to work hard. I want to eliminate, automate, or delegate. And now I consider myself probably, I'm very lazy overall, because I've got such good people that I could rely on. And if I could delegate it, there's things I can't delegate. Like, I can't delegate telling somebody, I love you, I appreciate you, you're kicking butt, and I'm proud you're on our team. I don't think it's fair to have Ashley, my new EA, doing that stuff. So, you know, it's been a fun road. Every single month over a month, we've grown since I've been in the business. But there was a time in 2017 where we were losing money, and I was more interested in revenue than I was in profit. And I got obsessed with walking in rooms like this and puffing out my chest and talking about revenue. How much did you do last year? Very few people say this is what the profit was of the company. They talk about revenue. And then I realized, I mean, my CPA would call me and tell me how much I owed, and I'm like, I don't even have that much money in my account.
Right.
And then I knew there was a problem.
Right.
So, tell them your quote about revenue and profit.
Yeah, revenue is for vanity, profit is for sanity. I met Al Levy in 2017, and this is before you guys. But, and Al introduced me to Ellen. I learned about the financial quick check. I learned how much money is in the account. Actually, this morning, this is very interesting, because it's not the formal process that Ellen put together. I'm in a lot of financial meetings, but Adrian, I mean, hopefully this doesn't get blasted all over the internet, but cash is $44 million up $1.3 million from last week, and he gives me all the details of what went out, what came in. So I'm always paying attention. I always know what's in the account, what bills went out, what big stuff's coming up. And that's all because of Alan. That's one thing, yeah.
Woo!
And she didn't really want to work with us. Al and her are best of friends. I mean, you guys have gotten to know each other. Al's a really strict guy. Al tried to fire me 3 times. Ellen tried to fire me the first day. Not the ideal client for anybody. I've definitely got ADHD, but ADHD is a superpower when you get the right people around you, because I could work for 18 hours straight if I love it. I have no hesitation. I like good versus perfect. So many people are like, yeah, we're gonna start that once this is figured out this. I'm like, no, like we're starting a Spanish website. And you know, one of my guys, Chase, he's like, well, we're gonna need Spanish CSRs, we're gonna need Spanish dispatchers, we're gonna need, you know, every Spanish speaking technician. I'm like, no, we're just gonna start it. We're gonna use the AI that speaks perfect Spanish. And we're just gonna put translators on everybody's tablets, because I could do that from one location. Bam, it's on every tablet with the technology we have. Sorry. And he goes, well, I don't think that's gonna be the best client experience. I go, what happens if you hire all these people and we start in 9 months and we get 2 calls a month? I was like, best case scenario, we get 100 new leads a day. And the people are really disappointed that we don't all speak Spanish. And I'm like, we'll be out there rapido. You know, I gotta speak enough to get. So, you know, so the thing is, let's not make it a problem until we know it's a problem. Let's get started. Let's break it 10 times. I'm the type of guy, you know, I'll build a parachute on the way down, because so many people in this day, they're like, well, we're not perfect yet. It's too early to start that. You know, we really gotta discuss. It's the same thing with diets. This is something that's really important. People are like, well, after the wedding, we're gonna start. It's never the right time to start. And here's what I've convinced myself. I had to change who I was. Like, I'm gonna walk 15,000 steps today, I'm telling myself and everybody I know, I'm a long distance walker. Like, I'm gonna walk, this is who I am. It's part of my life. It's not a diet, I'm a healthy eater. You know, I'm changing who my identity is, and I'm professing it and confessing it to everybody I know.
Boy, that was a lot there to chew on. So thank you for that. When you started the A1 Garage, it was just you, right?
Yeah, I had a partner. It was 2006. I was painting garage doors for a couple of years. And my partner was really good at sales. And what I really appreciated is, I would say, I didn't love myself very much. Like, people would talk crap, and he would always be like, dude, Tommy's the smartest guy in the room. You don't even know. He really built up who I was. But he did smoke a lot of weed, and that's what got in the way of the... So he was always like, I was the hardest worker. And, you know, I will say partnerships, even fathers and sons, there could be a lot of animosity. And in 2010, it was very difficult. My best friend, my roommate, and my business partner, it was like very hard conversation. But I said, listen, dude, you could have this business. You could take on the debt, or you could give me it, and I'll take on the debt. And he was very amicable. He said, look, he ended up moving to Montana. We're still great friends. And, you know, I think that he wonders if he stayed on. I'm like, dude, you have no idea. We didn't have anything going back then. It was nothing. It took 7 more years. I always say, been in business about 2 decades. The first 10 were practice.
First 10 were what?
Practice.
Brackets?
Practice.
Practice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're by yourself. You got $50,000 in debt, if I remember right.
Yeah, so here's what happened. I'm sitting there trying to figure things out, and I find out people are stealing toilet paper. The police are showing up for random stuff. It's like cars are getting in accidents. And I just sat there, and I was like, kind of felt defeated, and I'm like, who's the one person you could call on when you just don't know where to go? Is that like my mom is always like, so I called up mom and I'm like, mom, I don't know what to do. I was like, I'm your only son. I could really use your help. And she's like, what are you asking? I'm like, I want you to move to Phoenix. And she goes, that's a big ask, Tommy. This is my life. Her birthday's March 4th, 1954. Mine's March 4th, 1983. So we share a lot. And she says, let me talk to your stepdad, Bill. And she's like, how's this gonna work? And I'm like, well, you're gonna get 15 bucks an hour and Bill's gonna get about 70,000 a year. That's all I could afford. But what I could promise you is it's gonna be something big. I would never take a chance. I said, I know I could do this. I wanna get a master's degree. So I'm gonna be going to school, but I'll run the business. I need help with payroll and the call center. And she called me back up within a week and said, we'll do it, we're moving out there. They sold their house and they got in a truck and moved out into a small condo on the third level of this place. I just remember they had a really nice big house in Michigan. Then they moved to this 800 square foot place, and I lived there for 4 years as they helped me build the business. So it was something really special, because my mom is like, when my mom got on the phones, man, she just poured love into the clients. And I didn't realize that at the time with the way she handled it. And she'd say how, you know, my good look, we got the good looking tech from Michigan. She was talking, she never says she's my mom. And she'd be like, you called the right company and here's why. She'd go, oh, honey, listen, I am so sorry. She's like, you called the right, and she'd just go on and on. And I didn't realize it at the time, but when I showed up to these houses, they'd give me a hug. They say, lunch is waiting for you. And whatever the garage needs, we trust you, just do it. Like that's how she booked the call. And so now we got this thing called the Gina method that all of our CSRs wear pins. And I want to, like, if you could book the call, and I think most people's issue is their contact center. Speed to lead, answering the calls, booking on weekends, all of that. And if you book it like my mom did, we're gonna win. Because she wasn't an order taker. I mean, she literally had empathy. She was excited at times. She'd brag about the technician. She'd brag about the company. And the clients felt heard. And I think that there's a huge opportunity for everybody in this room to have a call that's like somebody that's... She was smiling every time on the phone. And you could totally tell the difference between somebody smiling. And I'd be like, you know, back then I was like, Mom, book the darn phone call. But she spent 15 minutes and it just... When I show up to the call, it was a lay down.
Love that. Love that. Is your mom's name Gina?
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that great? So what do you call it? The Gina?
Gina method. It's an acronym. Gina method. It's like, we've got more acronyms in this. I can't even keep track of every acronym. Like can't we just call it this? But they always make up acronyms at this company.
So what was the first sort of... I don't know, breakthrough. So, you know, we got how you started, and then we got 250 million, and we got now where you are now. But what were those breakthroughs in between there? Like, what was your first, like, okay, this is like big?
Yeah, so when I got into the master's program, everybody kind of despised me. I'd show up, they called it like, I had this big white van, and it kind of looked a little weird. I'm not even going to tell you what they called it. You can imagine. We're in a church, so. And I'd come in greasy, and I'd wash up when I got to the school. I was very fortunate, though. I got to sit down at this table, and it was these Asian students, and one of them told me, hey, we're all in charge of the Marriott search engine optimization. This is 2010. And I said, search engine optimization, so you guys try to get them, you know, seen on Google and the search engines. And Google was pretty early on at this point. And they taught me how to edit videos. They taught me how to get reviews, build citation sites, and rank on Google. And that's all we did when we sat down. So that was a big, big thing. I realized I could get unlimited leads. And that was kind of our strength as we made the phone ring off the hook. And then 2017, I started the podcast. And that 2017 podcasts weren't really a big deal. So I could get anybody on the podcast. That's how I met Al Levy. And when we hired Al, he said, where's everything documented? How do you win if you're at this company? What happens if you break down? What happens if you want PTO? How do you know if you're winning? So we built the manuals. And then the biggest thing, though, is I got onto ServiceTitan. Now, ServiceTitan was not doing anything outside of HVAC, plumbing, electrical. And it took me months and months. I finally talked to the founder, and he took a shot. He took a gamble. We talked for an hour. He goes, we're never going to do garage doors. By the time I got off the phone with him, he goes, we're doing garage doors. We're sending out 10 success managers. And I went to Pantheon in 2017, their big event, the first year. And I met all these guys that are doing $100 million in HVAC. And I walked up to these guys, and I'd smile. And I was just super humble. And I'd say, I'm just your biggest fan. And I'd say, I'm just a garage door guy. And they were like, that's cool, man. They were like, you're a good kid. And I was like, well, actually, I was wondering if I could come visit. And they say, sure, yeah, we can set that up. I said, well, can we set it up right now? And I'd bring an empty notebook, and I was like this student. I'd walk in, I'd buy everybody lunch, I take notes, I sit down with their training department, I learn about service agreements and financing. And then I take all that stuff home and I'd implement it very quickly. And I didn't go to one or two shops. I mean, I was at every shop north of 100 million. And we basically built the HVAC plumbing electrical playbook into garage doors. And that was a really massive change. And there's several other catalysts in the business, but when I started running it like a business versus a hobby, everything changed.
At what point did you start like spinning off locations? Because I think you had like, before you had your private equity investment, would you have like 29 locations?
Yeah, I was
19
in the mid
20s.
Yeah.
Okay. So what made you start doing more locations? And was that just, was that planned? Was that a catalyst? Was it just an opportunity or what?
I would say I knew how to get the leads, so growing locations just made sense. The problem, Service Titan allowed me to see my booking rate, conversion rate, average ticket cancellation rate. So without Service Titan, without knowing the scoreboard, I mean, I would have never been able to grow because you don't even know where the money's coming from. You're looking at a pile of money, and this happens all the time. I fly around still to a lot of companies, and they're like, yeah, I do this, this, this. We're in three locations. I'm like, well, show me the balance sheet for each location. I want to understand the P&Ls. And they don't have that. And they're still making money, but they don't really know where from. And, you know, I got to say, I was in the same boat. I mean, we were spitting off money. And one day, 2018, my good buddy Keegan comes out. And he's like, lay out all your information, all your financial information. He puts his glasses on and he starts highlighting and circling. And he looks at me and there's only one, if Jesus Christ came down to earth, he's the only other guy that could have said this at the time. Al wasn't gonna say it, nobody would have sold. He goes, close these four markets today. And I looked at him and I go, dude, it's just bad leadership, I could fix it. I mean, I'm a winner, I don't give up. And he looks at me and goes, close these right now.
Wow.
He goes, offer a $5,000 relocation package per guy and you close them right now. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I did it, and all of a sudden, man, I'm watching the bank account every day. And every month, it's just like, now we've got hundreds and hundreds of thousands in the bank account. And I had to take my own medicine. It was tough. And I've closed other markets since then. And I just, look, it's hard. It's hard to say, look, we're failing. But then I realized, are we in the right market? Do we have the right distribution centers? Do we have the right leadership? And so now we're building a playbook on how to go into a market and take complete dominance. I don't want to be, you know, popcorn stand in a market. I want to go in. I mean, right now, Houston did $32.2 million last year. And this year, it'll do $45 million. And here's the cool part. Because we have economies of scale, we buy better than anybody. We spend $80 million this year with our vendors. We're still able to bring 25 to 26% to the bottom line. And I don't care, I started talking about revenue, but I just pivoted very quickly to profit. And that's the biggest mistake when you get in rooms like this, is revenue. And I built this business, and I've invested in a lot of businesses. The first question I ask is, when are we selling? It better be 3 years or less. And I wanna know how to pull all the levers. When you know when the date's gonna come, and it doesn't need to be the exact day. It needs to be like, we're gonna sell probably around Q3 of 2028. Then you know the levers you could pull. And I'm building, all of our money's mostly, we might have a house paid off, but the largest asset we have is our business. And it's an asset. And if you treat it like that, and we get paid, unless you're in software, we get paid off of EBITDA. It's a fancy word for profit. And the fact is, like, that's all I look for. And then I'm like, there was 25 millionaires. $100 million went to earned equity in the first deal. And there's a lot more than that on this next deal. And you change people's lives. I meet so many owners that are like, I'm doing this for the employees. The day comes, they sell. They're like, we only care about the employees. Not a dime goes out to those people. They say how much they care, and they say how much they love them. And equity only works when there's a date that it's gonna turn into equity, if you're using equity incentive programs or phantom equity. And it's just frustrating. I've seen it happen a million times, but you know, I understand it. If it's not a massive amount of money, it's a lot easier for me to say because it was such a big amount of money, but yeah.
You got $620 million for half of your company. Is
no,
that right?
No. It was six. So the company was evaluated at a little north of that for the full amount of the company. I took half of it.
Okay.
So it was Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day. You sit down on these calls, there's 20 people, and they're like, are you ready? You know, and I'm like, yes. You know, and it's this weird feeling, and I'm like, of course I got my Goldman Sachs account up, and I'm like, I'm just, you know, rehashing the screen. I'm like, and then all of a sudden it popped up, and I'm like, whoa! And I couldn't explain the feeling because it was like, it was surreal. And I called my guy at Goldman Sachs and I'm like, dude, I'm never going to be able to spend this money. He's like, yes, you will. I know you. and now, yeah, he's right. So, and so now we're going after, we're doing the quality of earnings, getting the studies done, and we're going to be doing another deal. And it's crazy because you got a $600 million valuation. Now we're trying to be at $2.4 billion. In a matter of 3.5 years.
So here's my question to you. The reason I want to go through that journey is because it sounds like to me that everybody in here could do that if they wanted to do that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a guy that shovels snow. I wouldn't say we were a lower middle income. Didn't have, you know, a great mentor. I didn't have Zig Ziglar to learn from or anything. So I've always said if I could do it, I've been very, very good at recruiting people and holding them accountable and making sure they got a stake in the outcome. Hmm. And could Tommy Mello have done this? No chance. If I had to start over today with no money, no connections, it would take another 20 years. And we don't have that much time with where we're at in technology and what's happening. And the competition is fierce. And I always tell people, like, if you don't think there's somebody hungry that's waiting to take me down, there's a lot of people out there that can't stand me. They hate Tommy Mello. They say, man, this guy gets on stages and talks about profit. And it's really a mirror that they're looking into, that they're not happy with themselves because they've never done anything. Right. They're typing away in their mom's basement is what I think. But yeah, the point is, look, if you put your head to it, you build a plan. It's a math equation. You got to figure out what you want. Some people are like, I want that too. The question I always ask is why? Well, I want $100 million for my business. Why? Let me just tell you something very, very important. Jim Carrey said this. I wish everybody was rich and famous so they'd understand that's not the answer. Do you know how much stuff breaks on a big house? We've got people over every day, but then again, we have family over every day. Some people don't look at you the same. And it's okay. I always say pretty girls get hit on, you know, they're like, how does it feel to have money and people want to hang out with you because you have money? And I'm like, well, pretty women understand the same concept. You know, like, I'm like, it's not the worst thing. Like, if you want to hang out with somebody because they're successful, that's okay. But there's a lot of people that it drives them to depression. Everything changes. You know what I've learned is to love the process. I love the sprint towards a goal. I love the journey. And you wake up. I don't know if you guys ever heard of EOS, but Gino Wickman is like, dude, I sold 87.5% of this business. I got paid gazillions of dollars. The next day, I was depressed. I lost meaning. I lost purpose. I didn't feel like I had my identity. And he goes, I had all the money in the world. Yep. And if you don't fall in love with the journey, like the destination will change. It's like you get the touchdown and you're like, okay, what's next? I watch a lot of golf. It's like Scotty is number one player, Scotty Scheffler. He doesn't get as excited when he wins anymore. I mean, but it's he wants to play. He wants to compete. And so I would just say, look, if it's the destination, you better have a reason. Like I knew what I wanted to do. I got in a debate at Service Times Pantheon with Chris Hoffman. So we were debating on stage, private equity versus not private equity. And I teared up and I'm like, you know, my parents are in their 70s. And did I have money? Yes, I had some money. But now my dad's living in the best house ever with the coolest pool table. We shoot every Sunday. He goes golfing every day he wants to. He's going to go fishing with me in the summer. My mom just went to Italy. My mom earned every penny of it, but my mom, she took my Uncle Dave. Me and Bree were fortunate enough to cover that trip. My mom's going to get a lot more money in about 6 months. She's going to get a lake house in Michigan and be in our lake house. And I'm like, I wanted them to have quality of life to say I could have done something while I still could have. Yeah. And that's why I got teary-eyed, because I was like, it's not about me, not to mention the 25 other people that are just like doing amazing things with their family, and they've cut the generational curse that was passed down, and their lives are better now.
Want to run through, we've got five systems that every business has that we teach: leadership, marketing, sales, operations, administration. So give them, when it comes to leadership, how do you scale leadership? How do you develop leaders? I already told them the story, my garage door story.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because I don't know how you do this, but I already had you scheduled to come, and all of a sudden my garage door stopped working. So I don't know how you guys did that, but anyway.
It's all planned.
But
God does listen.
But anyway, so I've been listening to Tommy for years and years and years. By the way, where's Jim Clouk? Where's Jim?
He's right back there.
Okay. He's always standing at the back of the room. It's like, is the IRS here, or, you know. Anyway, he invited me to his house. All business, all of life is about relationships. And Tommy and I, he said, Tommy Mello's going to be here. I said, great. And so we're playing cornhole. I never played cornhole in my life. So Tommy taught me how to play cornhole. And then we had a little joke competition.
Yes, we did.
By the pool. I think I won. Anyway. So I've been listening to Tommy, and he's like, here's what we do, you know, like when the technician's on the way, he calls up and asks the client, you know, what they want from Starbucks, and then we do this, we do that, and here's how our sales process works. And I'm like, man, it sounds great. But listen, when you experience it, that changes everything. Anybody can talk, right? Everything that Tommy taught over the years happened when my garage door went on the blink. It was awesome. In fact, the guys, I called them garage door rock stars the other day when they were finishing my door. And they told me that when you bought the company here in Houston, that the entire team went to Phoenix for training. So yeah. Talk to us about leadership.
Well, we're not a company that does training. Training is who we are. It's not what we do.
Write that one down.
I played football, and we used to practice twice a day to play one game. So we'd practice 10 times a week to play one game. And I like sports a lot, but yet in home service, home improvement, you get with the best guy for 2 weeks and you're on your own forever. Mm. So we train. We know the score. On the back of a baseball card, you can see every single stat about that baseball player. We've got the same thing. I mean, I wish I could log into a vibe board and show you guys how we keep score and how everybody's got access, and we know who's winning, we know who's not. We created some software that I could reach out to the bottom 40%, and I could all send them a personalized message that says, hey, I'm not calling you out, I'm calling you up. Mm. I love you, and you know I'm here to watch you win. I need to know what I can do because I'm letting you down. And your family deserves more. So how can we turn this around? Because you're making 80K a year. You deserve to be making 200,000 a year. I always make it about them and how they could win. I think the main thing is you bring in people. The question you should ask yourself is, would I buy from you? My grandma's in heaven looking down right now, but I said, would grandma buy from you? Because we're different and we serve a lot of people that are elderly, and my grandma wouldn't buy from the same people I buy from. Would I go have a beer with you because you're a fun person that I want to hang out with that tells a great story? And the last one, which is really important, would I work for you? And if I'd hire people that I'd work for, there's a certain level of emotional intelligence that's there. That means they've got the empathy. They always see themselves, like when I talk, I'm like, how does this person perceive me? How am I coming off? When I sit there at the front of the room, am I yelling at people or am I motivating people? And so you can't make a leader with everybody. And there's certain things you just gotta drive or pull out of people. But first they gotta have a stake in the outcome. I think Jack Stack wrote a book, A Stake in the Outcome. I think you told me about that book years ago. And so
Ellen told me about it first.
Yeah, there she is. So a stake in the outcome. And then next, like, you gotta have a process. And just follow the process. We always talk about follow the process. You don't need to change it. You don't need to make it your own. And I think that's the most important thing, is the process works every single time if it's followed. And then some people start skipping steps. Right. And the big thing is, I realize you got to change people. They got to be happy with themselves. Mm-hmm. I always tell them at the end of orientation, look, I'm going to pour love into you. It takes 100 interviews to get one of you to this facility to train. You are special. You've arrived. Welcome to the first day of your last job ever. This is a career. And I spend 3.5 hours with them and I say, look, the hardest part is gonna have you understand that you deserve this. Don't do this for your family, don't do it for your wife, don't do it for your kids, do it for you. You deserve this. This is the time in your life I want you to be selfish and say, I've arrived, I'm here, I'm gonna go all out. I'm going all in on this. I'm gonna, no distractions. And when I'm at home, when I'm eating dinner with my family, no work. You're gonna be where your feet are, and we're gonna go all in, and I'm gonna get you guys every single resource I have to watch you win. And they gotta believe that. And some of them, you know, some of them didn't pass 10th grade. Some of them have, you know, they're missing teeth, and that's the first thing is, like, that's the first thing. Be honest with me. What do you need? And some of them are like, man, I wanna get my face fixed up. Okay, that's the first goal. And then you watch somebody walk in a room when they get their teeth fixed, or they lost the weight they were trying to do, and you'd never see that. They used to walk around and smile like this, and all of a sudden they're like, it's like John Travolta walking into the room. And their whole lives turn around. It's amazing. So we got a full-time dream manager, and we really want to know what their dreams are. And a lot of them, I'm like, you want to go to Disney World? That's a really crappy dream. I want you to fly private, stay in a penthouse, and cut every line. I want you to dream so big. And then in my book, I explained, my dream's got to be so big that all the other dreams fit in it. And so, but they got to be, like, listen, if somebody says this in an interview, I just want a warm plate of food and a roof over my head and I'm good. I'm like, yeah, you're not going to work here. I was like, go work for one of my competitors. I want you to dream. I like it when they say, I want this car, this car. I want to put my kids in private school. I want to take them to Jamaica in the summer. I want them to be in sports. I want to be able to pay for this. I want a second house. When they say that, I'm like, so how are we going to get there? And they say, well, what do you mean? And I say, well, how much is that trip going to cost to Jamaica? How much is that second house going to cost? Now we do some math. And then we say, well, you would need to at least make this much a year. So let's break that down. Here's how many jobs you need to run. What's the contingency plan if you fall short this week? We're going to pull your whole family in, especially the significant other. We're going to discuss why this is important for their family. And then the contingency plan, I'm gonna pick up an extra shift on Saturdays if I fall short. Like, it's mathematical certainty you're gonna make this money if you follow, and this isn't ripping clients off. This is an investment into their home, their family, and their safety. I'll tell you what, I worked with Dan Martell. He said, Tommy, I want you to learn one thing. I want you to buy how you wanna be bought from. And man, I used to rub two pennies together and try to take advantage of contractors. I was like, can you do me a better deal? And man, I got deals. My first house where my dad lives now, I got it installed, my tile, for $1 a foot. And you could drop a golf ball anywhere, and it was the crappiest install you've ever seen. My roof, I got a deal on that. It leaked after 2 years. My HVAC unit, amazing deal. Went bad after 3 years. And me and Bree are working on a lot of things right now, and I'm like, let's just pay for the best because it'll come back to bite you. And when I started buying, like, I'd go to an event and it would cost 30 grand, and I'd try to call the guy and be like, can you do it for 20? And now I'm like, yeah, put me down for 2. I'm bringing my leader, I'm bringing my COO, whatever. all of a sudden the world, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden clients didn't negotiate. They didn't ask for deals. It was like this power of the world or something, but I'm telling you, I buy how I want to be bought from now, and everything changed. Everything changed when I started doing that.
That's good. That is good. All right, you've talked some about marketing, owning a marketing market. What just top of your mind comes?
Yeah, so marketing.
You share about marketing.
I love marketing. I mean, I am like a marketing dork. Like, I geek out on marketing, like, so much. Like, marketing is everything. Operations do not matter if you don't have clients.
Amen.
Financials is a lagging indicator. What are you going to do? We ran 3 jobs last month. I could do that with a napkin. So leads are everything. But what changed several years ago is I started marketing for the right people to come onto the team. I said, how do I build the greatest funnel for A-plus players? Because an A-plus player will run circles around 20 B players. I mean, A players bring you straight up. An A player, I've got an A player, his name's Tiger. He calls me up and he goes, I'm going to do $3 million this year of revenue. And he goes, the best technician we've ever had has done 1.9. And I said, how are you going to get there? And he laid it all out. And this is on a Sunday. And ever since he confessed that to the world, to every technician, I mean, he's on target. He's killing it, man. This guy is just a ball of joy. And he told me exactly what he's going to make, what he's going to do with the money. And so market for the right people. And I'm here right now. And I promise you guys, like, if you get a chance, use our company because you'll see how it works. Like, a lot of people, I'm at events that I talk to 2,000 people at a time. And out of that event, I'll have 3 people that want to work for us. And I'll pick up 200 clients. So in a way, I'm actually feeding the A1. Like, I'm beating the drum all day for A1. So this is actually a marketing opportunity. And the other thing is, success leaves clues. I really spend a lot of time, like, who's number one on Angie's list? Not in my city. I'll find the number one person in the world on Angie's list, and I will fly out and I'll see them, and I'll pay it forward and do whatever I can do to help them, and they'll tell me every single thing they've learned, and they'll help me, because they're usually not a garage door company, and I mean, even if they were, I could probably get in with them, but I'll go to every single thing. Success leaves hints. It leaves clues everywhere. You just gotta look. So we go to this specialist that's a Google specialist. I'm like, wait a minute, who's number one on Google in HVAC in the biggest city? I go to Houston, who's number one? And then you just call them up. It's crazy how that works. And you say, I'm really impressed. I want to deliver value for you. I know how to do a few things that you might be interested in. Can I come out and visit you? I will pay you. Pick your price. $50,000, I'm there. And that's what I do. I look around and I say, who's already done what I want to do? And there's sources everywhere, next door. There's lead sources everywhere. And, you know, there's this old phrase that's probably the most important thing I can teach you guys. It's whoever could pay more per lead will always win. If you could make it work, and how do you make it work? You have a higher booking rate, a higher conversion rate, and a higher average ticket by giving options instead of ultimatums. We always give options. If you want the contractor solution, we could give you that. When the client says, that's more than I wanted to spend today, I say, no problem, Mr. Howard. Let's just pick another solution for you. We've got several other options. My goal is to earn your business today. I want you to store my number. I want to be your garage door guy for life. You're selling the home. Let's make sure you pass inspection. The day you move in that new home, let's make sure we could reprogram everything, make sure your door is safe. I'm here to earn your business. You can just remember that. And then we teach the guys, this is what you need to do. This is what you should do. If you were my mother, my mom worked 3 jobs when I was a kid. I love my mom so much. This is what I'd be telling mom to do. And some guys in my training will be like, well, my mom left when I was a kid. I was like, it's a metaphor. Could be your grandpa. Could be anybody important to you in life. But marketing, you know, I am obsessed with marketing, and that's the lifeblood, because that's the fuel that fuels everything. And when you learn how to turn on leads, and a lot of leads, that is how I hit my budget. It's a mathematical certainty. I know exactly how many leads I need to run. You divide that by your booking rate, divide that by your face-to-face conversion rate, and you divide that by your average ticket. Bam, that's where your revenue comes from. And then you multiply that by your cost per lead. It sounds, I'll write it down on the whiteboard, but the way you build a budget, the way we buy companies, the way we grow into new markets is mathematical certainty of where we're going to get. And I have invested a lot of money in top of the funnel. Ken Goodrich with Kettle, he works with, in Austin, the Wizard of Ads, and Roy Williams. And the deal is when people hear me and they relate to me, and I talk about mom, and I talk about grandma, and I talk about when I was a kid, what did I see in the garage my dad bought me? It was a 1976 Kawasaki. It was like, man, that garage door meant freedom. And when I tell these stories on the radio and on TV, people are like, they feel like they know me. I had a lady, we were at the YMCA passing out food yesterday, and she comes and gives me a hug, and she goes, you're the best company. She goes, you're Tommy Mello, you're the garage door doctor. She goes, your truck was in our neighborhood yesterday. The gentleman was so polite. She goes, I love you guys. And it was crazy. I'm at the YMCA. It's like, I don't, but they got to know, that's top of funnel, and it builds trust. So what happens? When Ken started doing this, people said, I only want you to come out. I only want Gettle to come out. I will wait 3 days. I don't care. There's no AC in my house, but I'm willing to wait. All of a sudden, no shows don't happen. Conversion rate goes through the roof. Your booking rate, they're calling saying, I only want you guys. The guy shows up. He offered a flashlight he used to hold for his dad. They said, whatever it needs. I used to do this guy named Jim Sharp. Now we work with Jim on the radio. But he was an endorsement. And they go, if Jim trusts you, we trust you. Just come do the work. And that's how it works. So, but you're not going to see that top of the funnel work for a year. And a lot of people, they say, we're doing, and a lot of people are like, we've done radio, we've done TV, we've done billboards. It doesn't work. I'm like, trust me, it works. All of a sudden, your Google starts to spike. My Valpak, you know, those little blue Valpak coupons? There's four other competitors in there. But how is it that we're at a 14% comp, meaning 14% of revenue, which is great for Valpak? It's unheard of. In fact, I work directly with the major people at Valpak. I'm on a call once every other week with every major vendor we use, and they do the reporting, and they tell me what the next steps are. I used to tell them what we want to do. Now I say, you work with thousands of clients. Here's one of four things are going to happen. We're going to spend more money with you. First of all, you got to hold us accountable. Number one is, if I've got a market, right now I've got four markets that are under conversion rate and under average ticket. So every one of those managers are on those calls. And I say, what are we going to do? Because it's not working. And when your guys don't have jobs, it's because of your leadership. So you get a plan together, or we're going to start spending less money. Now, on the other side of it, if it's not working and it's just not working at all, I'm like, what are you going to do for us? All of a sudden, we get five free months. All of a sudden, right now, they said, any market you grow into, we're cutting the cost in half. They said, once you get to this, we're going to do another discount, because they know where we need to. And they know me. I mean, I'm very confrontational with my vendors, and they know I've pulled out completely. They call me back up next month, and they're like, we got you a free cover. We got you this. You're on the back. You're on this. You're on this. So I'm involved directly with the marketing. And I think, you know, Al taught me, you need to know your financials, and you need to be the head of marketing. If you know your financials and you're the head of marketing, the company will do well. And I could thought, like, I could put a sermon at church today on marketing, but I know there's other things.
So, matter of fact, you wanted a whiteboard. Do you want to teach for a little bit?
Yeah, so, okay, yeah, I will. And you can keep asking questions along the
way.
Okay,
one question while you're getting ready for that. How has failure shaped your life?
Oh, I hope you fail, and I hope you fail hard. I hope you guys fail so bad, because I never learned anything by winning. I've crashed and burned. I'm the biggest failure in the room. I could tell you guys, man, I run at failure. We have this culture now that it's like, Luke called me, my COO, and goes, dude, we just lost 100 grand. I'm sorry. And I go, good. What did we learn? We're not going to do that again, right? One day, this was a few years ago, somebody in the finance department said, we've been paying the electricity bill on this lease that we haven't been in 5 years. I said, good. So that's newfound money. We're not going to make that mistake. Did we document the mistakes that we made? And they were like, you're happy? I'm like, I'm not thrilled that we've been paying this bill, but I'm like, we're not going to do it again, are we? And so failure is a gift. And we run at failure. A lot of people are like, what happens if we do it and we fail? I'm like, by the time we've loaded the gun and missed the target 10 times, now we're hitting the bullseye every time. The other person hasn't even walked up to even try. Like, so many people are, what if we fail? Look, don't bankrupt the company, but run at failure and consider it a gift that you don't want to do. So here's something interesting. I want you guys to write this little formula down, and I've modified it over the years. And this is an argument I got into with my COO, is what's your booking rate? And by the way, very few people in this room have software to know exactly precisely what your booking rate is. Like, you need to know it down to the decimal point. If I had my Vibe board up here, I could show you precisely what my booking rate is. Right now, it's 91%. And by the way, it's always a decimal point, but you should know it down to the decimal point. Now, here's the problem with the call center. You need to have every single form fill involved in that, too. It should be a contact center, a speed to lead, every single lead aggregator, everything. So I have two. I have my inbound calls, and then I have all the form fills. So it's a little bit, and I usually talk about the blended. But what does this mean? I'm losing how much of the calls? 9%. So then I look at, what is my cancellation rate? So I'll just put cancel here. I was at a 14%. So I'm just gonna put 14% right here. And then when I'm with a client and I knock on their door, we don't ring the doorbell. We knock the door because strangers ring the doorbell. Friends knock. And if there's a dog, we're playing with that dog. I mean, we are playing with that dog. And I'm telling you, so many clients are like, if my dog loves you, we're going with you. I always say, if they got a cat, don't worry about it, run. So face-to-face conversion rate, we're at 73.6. So there's 24.4% here. So I'm talking to my, so this is 47.4. 47.4% of all the people that want to use us, we don't earn their business. And these are some of the best stats in the home service industry. That means almost half of the calls are going to a competitor. So a lot of people, they call me up and they say, marketing is my problem, I need more leads. And they don't even know half of the leads. So I tell my CEO, he goes, man, we're not hitting our lead count. I go, so you want more leads? What happens if I get a lot more leads, if I doubled our leads? This number goes to 60%. It doesn't get better, it gets worse. The systems aren't designed for overload. They get better when you increase these percentages. And I didn't label these really, but booking rate, cancellation rate, and face-to-face conversion rate. So I wanna drive this to 80, I wanna drive this down to 7%, and I wanna drive this to 93%. That's gonna happen in Q2. So now I'm at 7% loss in the call center. I got 7% loss here, and I got 20% loss here. That's 34%. From 47%, that means 13%. I'm already paying for the phone call or the lead. This is like crazy how much profit comes. This is where those really high profit, this will get you into 70% gross profit range because you're already paying for this stuff. It's called efficiency. So hopefully that makes sense. And when anybody ever calls you and says we need more leads, you gotta be able to say this. So let's just say I wanted to do $10 million. I'm gonna take my booking rate, minus cancels. So we'll say, that may maybe 85%. I'll divide here. And then I'm gonna divide again by my conversion rate, and that's face-to-face conversion. And we can say that that's 70%. So you divide by 0.85, divide by 0.7, and then your average ticket, and we call that opportunity job average, we'll just say is $1,000. So you divide by this again, and then you got your cost per lead. It's important. It's cost per lead, not cost per acquisition. It's how much does it cost the phone to ring, not to acquire a client, and you can call that $200. And you multiply by this number. This is your marketing spend. This is how much you should spend on marketing to get to the 10 million. If it's more than 15%, you got to fix these. You got to raise your booking rate, lower your cancellation rate. You got to increase your conversion rate, increase your average ticket. And this is the one you want to lower your cost per lead. So when you build out a budget, it's mathematical formula. It's like, we don't guess and like pin the tail on the donkey. How much are we going to do this? This is what we'd love to do. No, this is exactly how much leads we need to hit this number. And it needs to fit into that 15% or less. I got a million things I could talk about, but I want to make sure I answer and deliver for you guys what the most important things are. But, you know, what's interesting about the garage door industry is when I got into the industry, you were lucky to get a 3X for your business. And then this crazy thing happened called COVID. And it was devastating when it first happened. It was like none of my guys wanted to show up. We didn't know the coronavirus, how bad it was. And I was pretty worried, but I communicated every single day with a plan. But all of a sudden, every movie theater shut down. Every nail salon, every hotel. I mean, it was like, so all this money shifted because I was essential. And man, when I found out we were essential, I was like, we're essential. And we could show up, we could drive, we were the only guys on the road. And I took, all of a sudden I got a phone call, this thing called PPP money. And I was like, PPP money, yay, $1.8 million. And I'll tell you guys when that happened.
You paid it in and you deserve it.
Yeah, it was all paid in. And Mike Bailey, who's actually in town right now, calls me up. He goes, I got a good friend I went to high school with. She does TV ads, and she wants to come shoot an ad. I said, how much is it? It's like 10 grand. I go for it, Mike. And this is in Milwaukee. Our phones rang off the hook from these ads. And so I put the whole 1.8 million. I took all of our radio down. I took all of our billboards down because nobody was driving. I put it all into TV. So I'm paying a tenth of the cost because they had so much inventory. So I'm paying a tenth of the cost and 10 times the viewership. It was like, oh, I mean, look, I think God was looking out because he's like, dude, just pour it all into this. And that's what we did. And all of a sudden, the biggest catalyst in the business, man, we started printing. Like if you could fog a mirror, you were hired. We're like, come on in. Come on, here's a wrench, go fix. And then all of a sudden, it's survival of the fittest again now. But we built the business so well during that time and put so many processes around it. That was a huge opportunity. It's like what marketing sources are working. And it's very hard to get attribution perfectly. I've got 7,000 call tracking numbers. I got this thing called UTM parameters to know what pages they landed on. It's very mathematical. I mean, you should see, I've got Power BI, I could pull up exactly. I've got a pie chart that shows me every single lead source. The number one lead source, I'll tell you, it's kind of cut like this. This is the GMB, Google My Business page, and this is PPC. And now we're doing all this optimization on the LLMs, which is a large language model like ChatGPT. And there's a lot of different models out there, Gemini. And so we figured out a way to kind of hack that system to show up number one there. And it's a lot to do with, there's a guy named Marcus Sheridan, really great guy, actually. I've gotten really close to him. And there's a lot of stuff called schema data on the website and feeding the machine. And it's called Endless Customers. It's a book I highly advise reading because now we're a content factory. We're always putting out new content. We started like 3 new podcasts just to give the clients questions. And I want to get found before you know there's something wrong. Like when somebody says, if you're an HVAC company, the thermostat's not working right. So they search, why is my thermostat showing 74, but it's 80 degrees in the house? Well, those are all research things. So you kind of want to get found before my stuff breaks. And it's higher in the funnel, but it's a much better conversion rate. But I focus on 3 things. The culture of the business, I'm the culture setter. I love sales and I love marketing. And I'm always going, what broke and what system broke? What system was not working that allowed this? So I'm a systems engineer now. And I could go into any business, and I've done this now with every business I've been involved in. The hardest part is getting the talent. And that's why I've opened up this massive funnel to get, I was talking to my CFO and he said, look, this person's gonna be a lot more than we expected. I go, I don't care what it costs. In fact, Tommy 3.0 is I'm already building the org chart of the next company. And the new org chart is probably going to cost $20 million of new talent to come on. $20 million a year. But I don't care because it's going to make us so much faster and so much more scalability. How do you get the number one person? I don't want somebody that says, I'm eager to try. Yes, I love technicians like that. I want somebody that says, listen, you're at $2.4 billion valuation. I just came from a $20 billion company. I know everything you're about to face, and I know how to just sprint through that stuff. It's the who, not how. How do I get the right who's on the bus that can sprint at the goals I'm trying to do? And I've got five ways to get this company to a $20 billion company very, very fast. And this bracelet right here, my team made this for me. It says, ruthlessly prioritize, stay focused, and run. Ruthlessly prioritize. You guys, after a three-day conference, you're gonna have a lot of ideas. How do you ruthlessly prioritize those ideas and put them in your top five? And so here's what my leadership team does. I've always got ideas. And I'm like, here's what we're gonna do. The best answer they tell me, which one of these five do you want us to remove to put that one in? And I'm like, oh, shoot, you're right. Because these top five things are gonna get us to our North Star the fastest. And if you're a visionary, you're an idea person, and you got all these ideas, and you're like, man, and your team's going, the best story I've ever heard, Jeff Bezos, early days of Amazon. He goes, hey, he talks to one of his consultants who ended up working at Amazon. He goes, let's go whiteboard. I got some ideas I wanna get going on. He took the marker out of his hand and he goes, you're not going to that whiteboard. He goes, if you walk up to that whiteboard right now, Jeff, you're gonna bankrupt this company. He goes, we're not ready for all your ideas. He goes, we just gotta stay focused on this thing. But here's what you're gonna do, Jeff. You're gonna take all your ideas, and this is so long ago, you're gonna put them in a file box. You're gonna put them in an order of importance. And as we're ready, as the company continues to grow, you're gonna give us this next one. And you're gonna prioritize them and tell us what's gonna be the most important to get us where we need to go. Now, here's the key thing. The major thing I want you to know, Jeff, is your job is to build a company that can handle all of your ideas. And now look at the company. You think Jeff goes into the warehouse and he's like, I wonder what the procurement time. He doesn't do any of that. He's hired people that are so much better. If I walk in and I meet my leadership team and I feel like I've got an edge on them at all, they're gone. And they are all, do you know how many books ends up on my COO's desk a week? Do you know how many podcasts he and I send to each other? He's growing just as fast, if not faster than me. That's what we are. We're always learning. We're always investing. Ellen knows this. We go to Pantheon. Most people bring 2 to 3 people. We brought 25 last year. We want everybody to come back with energy. Like if I went to this event, there's no way it would be me and my fiance. It would be me and five of my top people because I want them to come back and get the energy and get excited and say, listen, you know what happens when you go back into your business and you were at Howard's event? They're like, oh, great. What did Howard tell us to do now? But, you know, but if they were here, they'd go, well, I bring them to my event. I bring up everyone because I want them to have that fire in their belly. I want them to get excited. I want them to be like part of the, and so we just got trained on ChatGPT, $50,000 for a day. Now most of the people are building AI assistants. My COO just built in Claude, the OpenClaw. He just built a whole system out. Like we're a software company now that does garage doors, by the way. We're running about 25 different softwares. Service design is the main thing, but we got Power BI, we got the cameras in this, we got Intact, we've got the call center, Lace.ai, we've got Mantle to get higher conversion. We started with this new one, right? And Aaron Gaynor out of Columbus, Ohio called me up and he goes, Tommy, you know, we're best of friends. He goes, I want to give you something. I think you need to check out this company, Mantle. They're small right now, but he goes, we're making 40% more with the way we display the options now. And so I call up Zach and he goes, we don't do garage doors. I was like, I've heard that before. And I said, I'm gonna buy you a first class flight to come to Phoenix. He came out, he's like, dude, he's like, it's hard to sit down with you and not get excited. He's like, we're gonna do it. We're gonna build it for garage doors. And so they built it, we started on it. 15% higher closing rates with a 1,500 average ticket. And so you're looking at this going, now I'm going right into here. And I'm maximizing both of these dramatically. And I'm going, how do we continue to work on, if you just work on these all the time, this formula, and you get really, really good, you're going to be printing money. And that's the deal, is like, I'm having so much fun in this journey. It's like, I can't imagine, like, you know, I've seen Howard spends a lot of time at the beach, but he's also written like 18 books in the last month. You know, he's also keeping very busy with these events. And like, I don't want to retire. I just, you know what I want to do? I want to be able to live it, my life the way I call the shots. I get to go in and do orientation, best day of the month. I get to run the sales calls. I go into work excited knowing I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. You might say, hey, what happens when there's a payroll issue? I don't know how to log in. I don't want to know. What happens? I started getting a lot of contempt for lawyers, so I'm not allowed on those phone calls. I just try to keep them very short. You know, if there's an accident, we had a few accidents in the last couple months. I don't even know about them till I need to know. I don't want to know any bad news. I've got all these people around me to take all the bad news. I only get to hear the wins. But I walk in every day and I'm smiling. And I'm like, I don't know what, there's no bad things as far as I know. There's a million bad things that they're guarding me from. And I'm on a need to know basis because they know how emotional I get. They know that I could get, I'll say, a lot of anxiety when I hear something's wrong, whether it's an employee's having a major issue. Now listen, if there's someone going through a lot, I want to know about that. And I want to call that family and I want to say, we got your back. There's certain things I do need to know, but they guard me, they really do. And that's an important thing that I told everybody when they start. I don't handle bad news well. I'm the mascot of this company. I want to show up with a smile. I want to be a giver. I want to be the guy that's giving the prizes. I will take the losses. I'm not afraid of that. We got to close the market down. Somebody got in an accident. We'll deal with it. But that's why you're here. So I always say at the orientation, if you got great news, you guys all have my cell phone number. I want you to call me, text me, email me. Tell me the great news. If you got bad news, I want you to call Luke. So I want to open it up to questions. You guys, I want to try to elaborate anything I can or anything in your business you need help with. What do you got?
Can you explain that formula up there again, how you figure out how much you spend in marketing?
Yeah, so you take your goal, and when you divide this by 0.85, the number's going to go up because this number should get higher. So the number's going to go up. Then you're going to divide it by 0.7. So your booking rate minus your cancellation rate. So in Lace.ai, what I realized is cancellation rate's a big deal. I never used to put that into the equation until it became 14%. So you take your booking rate minus the cancellation rate. And by the way, it breaks it down by CSR. Because I got people booking at 95%, but cancellation's 20%. So what's their actual if they're at 95 minus 20? 75. So booking rate minus cancellation rate, and then there's a decimal there, 0.85. That's how you turn it into a percentage. Then you divide it. When I knock on your door, how many clients am I? We put our threshold at $100. Anything over $100, we consider a conversion. You can decide what number that is. But if I go in and collect a service call, I didn't earn your business. You're still going to a competitor. So then we divide by the conversion rate when I'm door to door, when I'm knocking on your door. Then we divide it by the cumulative average ticket of the company. Now this is important that it's average ticket including zeros. It's not the completed average tickets. And this is a big, big important number. It's the average including zeros. The average ticket. And then you multiply that by your cost per lead. And then you're gonna come up with a dollar figure of what you need to spend in marketing. But I like this 10 million because if I did the math, it might come out at $3,400,000. That's 34%. That's bad news bears. That means I shouldn't spend the money until I fix these to get down to under 15%. Does that make sense? Okay, good. What else?
I'm gonna ask the AI question. So how did you get your team involved to learn it and start implementing it? You said you did a day training for them. Was that everybody or just certain?
Yeah, there was about 30 people in the room. There's a lot of people that are going to ChatGPT, but it's nowhere near. I like intent-based searches. They're higher tickets. So intent means my garage door spring just broke. I'm still going to Google for stuff like that personally. But if I'm doing research, I'm going to the LLMs. And what happens is most companies are rewriting a new website so the AI could read it. And that's called schema data. And you're feeding it the questions that people are asking. And we've got a lot of tools to be able to know these things. And so we're not guaranteed. Unfortunately, you don't have good attribution built into the LLMs yet, and they don't have paid out yet. When they come out with paid, which they will, ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, all these companies will have paid. Who's the first one going to get on the paid? I am. And it's going to suck, and I'm going to lose money. But we're going to dominate when we figure it out, because the minimum to get on some of these is you got to spend $100,000 a month. I'm going to say, let's spend $500. Let's make sure that they know we're serious. And that's called R&D money. And it's fine, because we're going to fail. We're going to fail. We're going to slip. We're going to fall. And then all of a sudden, we're going to go, bam, got it. Now everyone's toast. Because they are like, well, once it's figured out and everybody loses all the money, that's when we'll get in. But we've already figured it out by that time. Now you're kind of screwed. I'm in 25,000 homes a month. Do you know how many people ask us for a front door and a mini split? Could we do the garage flooring? So I'm just going to go out and buy the biggest company I could in one market that we're in, make sure they've got the systems, make sure our systems can talk. They're going to do the work, and then we're going to build a national training center for that trade, and we're going to just, I mean, we're trying to play advanced chess when most people are trying to figure out how to set up the checkers board. And that's the big deal, is that if I could take my average ticket and we call it a turnover to another trade and bring this up, if I sell 5% of my clients a mini split to make sure it's cool in the summer and warm in the winter in their garage, I double my EBITDA. And I know I'm going off from your LLM question about the large language models, but one thing I'll tell you is it's very fun to get excited about the Tommy talked about schema data in the LLMs. And Tommy talked about service agreements and financing. I'd focus almost all my attention to get this number in the 90s, the booking rate and lower your cancellation rate. That's where I'd be. If I were sitting in the audience right now, unless I was world-renowned, the top 1% in my industry, this is where I'd be focused. Then all of a sudden, you can put more money into leads. Hopefully that helped a little bit.
With the face-to-face closing ratio, are all your technicians trained to sell, or do you run a sales crew to increase that, or how do you do it, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, so my technicians are all sales people, but they're not allowed to sell doors. So I've got two interesting things. I've got my virtual product specialists, where we get 5 green lights from the customer before we're allowed to turn it over. Both parties are there, or we could get them on the other line, both parties, to both decision makers, if there is two. Sometimes if it's grandma, we want to make sure they get a kid on the phone. Number two, urgency is created of like, we need to do this, or we need to repair this. Number three, they're price desensitized. You know, this is what I tell them, I anchor it. A garage door could cost 50K if you want to be in a magazine. It could all the way down to 5, but I anchored it at 50. Finance options delivered. Finance options, did you want to use your money or our money? Most people are taking advantage of this amazing, we call it a promotion. And that means they're pre-approved. And then the last one is we mellow the customer. They love me, they love the company, and they feel loved. Those 5 green lights happen, we turn it over. My top guys, there's 20 of them. They got 3 monitors. They know every single financing method. It takes a 15-minute close. We could build the new door on the home, on the iPad for them. And yesterday we were at 71.4% conversion rate, which is pretty good in this industry. So that's how we do the turnovers. And then we also have what it's called a hero line. If you can't close that job, you're going to call in, I got 10 guys on that team. And you say, I got to call a manager because we're going to figure out a way to earn your business. And then I figured out 10 things we could add that cost us very little money. Like a bottom rubber cost about $20. We sell it for $200. It does take time and labor. But I'll say, by the way, the thing that keeps all the nasty cockroaches and bugs and mice and spiders out, that bottom rubber that keeps the rain out and the weather, we're going to go ahead and add that. So I try to add value rather than give a discount. I add things that cost us very little. And now they're converting 61% of those zeros I got. And an average ticket of $1,000. So 61% of the zeros that I had now are converted to a paying client that's going to use us again in the future. So I try to build a department that's specialized. Right now, the newest department that hasn't lifted off yet is a one-on-one department. We're going to sit down with every technician for 1 hour a month, a week, and go over, there's if, then this. If you're failing short of conversion, here's the plan. Then we go into selling doors, then Max Life, which is our trademark parts. Then we go into openers, then we go into service agreements. Then we go into to five-star reviews. And any 10-year-old could come see that if this failed, then this is what we need to do. And so I've got all these departments. I've got an IS department, a door ordering department. I've got all these departments, and they each have a scorecard. And they each know who's winning, and each individual has their personalized scorecard, no more than five things to know if they're winning. And that's why I'm telling you this, like, we're going to a knife fight. I feel like this company that we're at is bringing a bazooka. It's like not even fair.
Pay structure? Do you pay your guys salary plus commission?
No, it's only performance pay.
Performance pay?
They'll always make more than time and a half on... They'll always make more than minimum wage. I mean, if you're not making six figures at this company, there's a problem with you. But I don't like to call it commission. I like to call it performance pay because we look at your driving score. We look at a lot of other factors that will limit that. First time job arrival. So a lot of you have performance metrics, which are these. We started looking at operational metrics. How long is the guy not in the garage? How long does it take them to pick up parts? How much time are they doing meetings? How much drive time? And the only time we're making money is when we're in the garage, which is operational KPI. So we started paying attention to those. But I don't want these guys taking advantage of grandma. So we record every call in the field. We use a company that I started called FieldSpark. There's Ciro, there's Rilla Voice. We listen to those. We make sure to get 40 pictures. We bring a scale and we weigh every single door. And we make sure it's a legitimate repair, not taking advantage of somebody. And that's how I stop from the, you know, when I'm doing performance pay, I'm looking at your recall rate, and it better be under 2%, or you'll get fired. But most of the time, if you're over that, you just need more training. I'm not the first one to say, let's fire somebody. But yeah, I think it's important that you figure out performance pay versus just commission, because commission could really rub clients the wrong way. But hourly, I don't want an hourly person in my house because they're goofing off, they're not showing up, they're not fixing it right. There's no incentive for them to get in and out. I mean, they're just, the incentives aren't aligned that way.
Do you also like separate by service? Like, do you send a repair technician out, or do you send a like full garage door technician out?
So I've got a technician, I've got a maintenance tech, I got level one, level two installers. The installers are paid on sold hours.
Gotcha.
Instead of a percentage of the job, they're paid on how typically they can make about $200 per install.
Because I'm in roofing, and selling a repair when the guy doesn't really do the repair is a little bit different than selling the full replacement.
It is different, and it's a whole different. Roofing's a little bit different. That's why it's harder to do garage doors. I mean, if I was in roofing, I always say I'd already be have $10 billion because it's just a bigger average ticket. I mean, I am going to start a roofing company, and we're going to go buy every single company we could possibly get, and I'm going to have every lead aggregator, and I'm going to own the labor as well. But the deal is it's going to be an hour presentation. I'm going to have a GoPro. I'm going to be circling all the things, and then I'm going to give options, and I'm going to make it super affordable for you to buy a really good roof. But it is different because I don't necessarily want to repair roofs. I will, but that's just a Band-Aid. But I will if it's a newer roof. But I want to put something into the home. And we're using all this different data farming. Like I know every one of my guys goes on to Zillow and sees when did the house sell. If it sold 2 years ago, I know they've only been in the home 2 years. It might be 10 years ago. We pull in all this data. We know exactly. I'm working on this data loop that I'll know how many dogs they have. Like I'm going to know exactly how old their kids are, what their hobbies are. If they're a vet, I'm sending one of our vets there. If they just got out of the Marine, let's say they're a Marine, I'm sending a guy that's a Marine. I'm matching up their client. The dispatch software we're working on will recognize that. It's pretty nutty. It's kind of scary, but it's kind of fun at the same time. What else?
My name is Chris Laveau. I own Greater Texas, your trusted source for affordable homes and services. We do everything in the mobile home world. So we set up dealerships, and then we have service companies from the movers to scale all the way up. I want to scale to Dallas and the next and the next and the next. How, at what point do you make that choice to do that? And then how do I get 20 minutes with you?
Yeah.
That's selfish, but that's
well,
my
maybe
question.
We could do a Q&A, because what I've kind of learned from Dan Martell is everyone should have an opportunity to listen because they probably have the same questions. So maybe we could just do like a 2-hour session. It's just hard because I've got 168 hours in a week. And it's I spend 50 working, 50 sleeping, 10 working out. I still got 60 hours left, but Bree wants a little bit of my time. My mom and dad want some time. Certain people in the company want time. But what I'll tell you is I say don't grow until you own the market and have all the systems. This is where you go to church. This is where you go. Your kids went to school. This is where your family lives. If you don't own a high market share of your own market that you're in, it's going to stink in the next market. So own the current market. Make sure the first market, and by the way, I'd run it like a franchise theory. A franchise means it's turnkey. It means I buy into this franchise, I'm a franchisee, I just play the system. I play the book, Michael Gerber, E-Myth. A lot of people start a franchise, they don't have the systems, they don't have the call center. Like if I own a franchise, I would own all of it. I'd own the marketing, the call center, I'd own the hiring, I'd own the training, I'd own all of it. And so if you run it like that, it's a system that runs the business. Most people are like, man, if I lost these two guys, we're going on Pinnacle Trip. All the best people, there's 100 of us going. All my top managers, my COO, my CFO, Bree and I, all my top technicians and installers are going to be gone for a week in Mexico. We won't lose a dime. And you say, well, those are the top performers. Well, for some reason, the weird thing is that all the other guys think they're getting all the best jobs now. And they like step up to this next level. They're like, man, well, now we get the good jobs. And it's not true because that's not how we dispatch. But it's pretty impressive if you could leave your company for 2 months and the company is growing when you're not there. That's what I take a lot of pride in. If you are the reason your business is winning, then do not scale. Amen. If you're the one putting out the fires and figuring things out and dealing with the clientele and calling the vendors, like I'm on these calls because I choose to be and I enjoy them. And I think I'm a pit bull when it comes to negotiating with them. But the business runs without me. Me and Bree were in Costa Rica for 10 days. I came back and it was a record week. And in fact, they get excited when I leave. So this is why I travel so much, to get out of their hair. But yeah, I'd say you gotta have the systems dialed in and break it a couple times along the way and redial in the systems. And inspect what you expect. The systems, we spend so long building these amazing systems, but then we have no way to make sure the systems are being enforced. There's no system, the wrong system, or the biggest one is the system's not being followed. What are the mechanisms in place to make sure the systems are being followed every time? So you know how we offer coffee on the way? That's recorded in ServiceTitan, and that's pulled out into a tool that analyzes that we did that. Now, it doesn't happen all the time. That's why guys get suspended, and sometimes they get an opportunity to work for one of my competitors. What do you got? We're done? Okay. Sorry, guys.
Give it up for Tommy Mello, ladies.
You can set up a time where we can do a couple hours just on a Zoom call.
Wait. Say that again where they can hear it.
Yeah, if you guys want, you know, I'll work with Howard. We'll just do 2 hours and we can just do the webinar and I'll answer all your questions because I know you guys all have questions and I don't mind taking it for you guys. So we'll get that set up. Thanks, brother.